Hey friends, welcome to episode 132 of Motherhood in Hollywood. My guests today are the executive producers and co-creators of the new CW show, Life Sentence. Richard Keith and Aaron Cardillo are two of the most nice and funny and genuine people that I've ever met. You guys are going to love hearing their stories about how they used to be actors, and now they are running a show for the CW network. So exciting. I can't wait to share it with you. Here we go.
Grab your popcorn and goobers. It's time for Motherhood in Hollywood with your host, Heather Brooker. This is a crude prude's perspective on being a full-time mom in showbiz. She's not a perfect mom, but she can play one on TV. Hold on to your butts. Here's Heather.
Hey, everybody. So we are back from a sort of unplanned two-week hiatus for Motherhood in Hollywood. As you guys know, if you're following along on social media, I was invited by Disney to go to Walt Disney World and on a Disney cruise for 10 days. So it was a really long trip, an amazing trip. I'm still sort of trying to put all my thoughts together and how I want to get started writing and share it with you guys because I feel like I learned so much. It was the Social Media Moms Conference, and they taught us about how they do social media, how they do their website and blogging and that sort of thing. And then they also had some really just wonderful speakers give us a little sneak peek at movies like Christopher Robin, A Wrinkle in Time, and some Star Wars stuff. So just a lot of really great information. I'm so grateful to Disney for inviting us and our family to go down there. We made some incredible memories. And I'll tell you, you know, Disney World was something that was never on my radar as a place to visit because, you know, we live 45 minutes from Disneyland and we go there. We're annual pass holders. We go there a lot. And the idea of flying all the way across the country to spend money at the Disney World Resort was never something that we even thought about because we get our Disney fix here. But it's such a different place. It's like so huge for one thing. It's massive. There's all the parks. If you've never been, there's like so many different parks, whereas at Disneyland, it's just Disneyland and California Adventure. And to get to go on the cruise on top of it, and that's another thing that was probably never on our radar. To be honest with you, I was a little nervous about cruising with Chan because she's still so little, but they really cater to kids and to families, and it was just a wonderful, magical experience. So when we got back, then, of course, Mom gets a cold. And it's been lingering for like a week. So yay, I'm now behind on things that I was already behind on. So isn't that just the way life is? Just when you think you're going to get caught up on something or going to try to get caught up on something, it doesn't work out because you're busy. Things happen. Life happens. Oh, my husband's, what a sweetheart. My husband just texted me and said, "I hope you're feeling better, baby. I love you." That is so cute, you guys. I wanted to share that with you because it happened in real time and in real life. And I also want to share with you guys how grateful I am to my guest this week, to my friend Rich Keith. He goes by Richard now. He's the big guy. He's all grown up. My friend Richard Keith and his writing producing partner, Aaron Cardillo. They are so lovely and they were so wonderful to meet with me this last week. We've been trying for months to pick a time to get together, but they've been super busy because they have a new show on the CW network. It stars Lucy Hale. You've probably seen promos for it. It's called Life Sentence, and it looks so good. It's so smart, such a smart and clever idea, and I think that people are really going to love it. They have such a wonderful sense of realism, but it's also funny and charming, and I'm so excited for them to tell you about their journey, how they both used to be actors, you know, in the regular day-to-day grind of auditioning and, you know, hoping that they get a cast and things and that sort of thing, to where they really kind of took control of their career and started writing and producing. And now they have another huge show on the CW network. So I'm very excited for you guys to hear more about that. And also, because I had a cold while we were filming this, while we were recording this, there's going to be like, I sound like such a dude. And they were so gracious because literally every 5 seconds I was hacking, coughing. So I'm going to spend the next few hours trying to edit out some of those hacks and coughs so you guys, when you're listening, will not be distracted, because I really want you to hear their full story and listen to their show or go watch their show. It premieres on March 7th. It's called Life Sentence. It's on the CW Network. I'm going to put up more information on motherhoodinhollywood.com. Also, if you guys please take a minute, subscribe to my podcast. If you haven't done that yet, if you're a first-time listener, first-time caller, please subscribe to my show and leave a review. Let me know what you think. And I would really appreciate it. Also, follow me on social media at Heather Brooker on Twitter and at Motherhood in Hollywood on Facebook and the Instagram. All right, I am going to wrap up my mommy monologue and let you guys hear from my guest today, Richard Keith and Aaron Cardillo, the executive producers and co-creators of the new CW show, Life Sentence. So this is a huge thrill for me, actually, because not only have I been planning this interview for months, but I am a huge fan of both Aaron and Rich, and I'm so honored to have you guys on the show today. Thank you for meeting with me.
Thank you for having us.
Sorry that it's taken us months.
You're busy. You've been busy, like, doing a show.
And raising human children.
Yes. So I want to talk about that a little bit. We're definitely going to talk about the parenting aspect of your lives. But I want to mention this really quickly because Rich was one of my first guests on Motherhood in Hollywood. And that was about 2.5 years ago when you guys were just working on Life Sentence, on Significant Mother.
Yes. Yeah.
And after that episode aired, I got lots and lots of emails, messages from people who were so inspired by your story and so inspired by how you transitioned from an actor going on commercial auditions and, you know, kind of struggling somewhat in that way. Not to say you were not wildly successful.
I was not.
But
my debt was high.
But how you took a passion for this industry in a different direction, and you found success in a unique way by creating and not just sitting back and waiting for Hollywood to come to you. So I just wanted to make sure I told you that.
Thank you. It's only been 2.5 years. You could have sent me an email. But no,
listen, I would have done this months ago.
I'll take it when I get it. That's true. I've been sitting on this praise. If you told me you had specific praise, we would have made this happen.
There was one person in particular, I want to say, this young man named Adam, who emailed me and said that he completely changed his career. He now is a story editor, or what is I don't want to say
editor.
Lower level, because that sounds really rude, but one of the, like, entry level, that's what I'm trying to say, on an ABC show
because of
that interview that we did.
Wow.
You're a career maker. You didn't even know.
Does he know where to send the 10%?
Is that how that works? I'll let him know. But he left acting and decided to pursue writing and do more producing behind the scenes stuff. So I just want to let you guys know, my show is a big deal.
Yes.
It changes.
That was
lives.
A long for preamble sure. to bring it back around. No, but I think that's one of the first things that drew me to wanting to work with Erin is, you know, she was an actor too and was writing on the side. And I feel like ambitious people are attracted to each other. And, you know, I'd read her writing and she had read mine. And I just really liked that I'd found someone that wanted to work with me, which was nice, but that also had a similar level of ambition, but also passion. And it's a really silly thing. And I hate to reference this person, but Matt Lauer, there was an interview a long time ago where he met with his agent when he was still like a regional newscaster in Wilmington, North Carolina. And he was like, so, you know, what are your goals moving forward? We should just, you know, aim for those. And he was like, I want to be on the Today Show. Don't get me any job that doesn't get me one step closer to being on the Today Show. Mm-hmm. And I always thought that was such a smart way to approach work and art as well. And, you know, Aaron was one of the few people that I knew that was not only talented, but sort of had that drive and foresight. And
we have vision.
Yes.
Vision.
Yeah. You got to have vision.
I think that's so important because there's so many actors that are just like, whatever, they're going to find me. I'm going to be walking down the street and, you know, I'm going to find success.
Yeah. We have not found that to be the case personally. Although I'm sure it does happen, but it would be, that's putting a lot of faith in chance, luck. I guess.
Yeah. Although being a former actor, I do, whenever possible, like if I run into someone who I knew who was an actor, like when we were casting the pilot, I ran into a friend from like 8 years ago who was working at Picket Fences on Larchmont. And I was like, you should come
great
in and audition.
Great store, by the way. Yeah, Picket Fences store. On Larchmont. Great baby yes. stuff.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just so you know. Moms, runs.
DM us for our addresses, Picket Fences.
Yeah.
No, but I ran into him and I was like, you should come in and audition for the show, because that stuff doesn't happen very often. But I do think we both still have a passion for helping people get started, because I think, like you said, we had such a non-traditional mm-hmm. beginning to our career.
I would love to talk about how, now I know how you guys met, but I know a lot of people listening may not know. It's not easy to find a symbiotic writing partner. I would love to know how you guys met and how you ended up discovering this about each other, that you wrote well together.
Yeah, well, we actually met in acting class so long ago now, it's crazy.
Years ago.
We met in acting class, and we didn't write together probably for almost 10 years after we met, would you say? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a friendship that developed over time. We had respect for each other's work, and then we both started writing separately. We were writing features and knew the other one was writing, and decided to read each other's work and give each other notes. And we were both pursuing solo writing careers for quite some time. And then...
And still pursuing acting pretty
aggressively. Yeah, and still acting full time. And then Rich and I ended up working together on a pilot where I was an actor and he was brought on to be like the punch up guy on set.
And we didn't know that each other were working it until we got to the airport. Oh. And I had another friend that brought me on, and I was like, oh, that's so funny that you're here and I'm here. And
yeah. And we kind of connected during that. And, you know, it was a half hour single camera comedy. And Rich, it was soon after that that Rich was like, you know, I actually have an idea for a half hour single camera comedy. Would you want to write it together? Because we had a lot of fun working on that pilot and kind of collaborating in a different way, you know, just on set. But I mean, that was sort of where it started. You just, you were like, let's try this together, which seems in TV was really exciting for me because I hadn't written any TV before.
And you had mostly written features.
Yeah. And the thought of doing TV alone was a little bit daunting because it's such a big...
It's not just writing. I mean, if you're successful, it's writing, it's producing. It's all producing everything under that umbrella. You know, there's post, there's managing the cast, there's managing the writing staff. There's, you know, you're a showrunner and a writer and doing all of that. And especially when we were doing just half hour single camera, the thought of doing that while writing three jokes a page seemed awful and lonely to do by yourself.
So, yeah.
I feel like I can write television, and then I sit down to do it, and I'm like, this is garbage. I'm the worst. Oh, I'm horrible. But
feeling never goes away.
Does that ever go away?
Nope.
Because I'm definitely by myself, and I would love to have found somebody who I could partner with and who could, you know, bounce ideas off of. And it's so great when you find that wonderful partner. Because a lot of people don't.
I have a writer friend, Stephen Rogers, who was nominated for pretty much everything but an Oscar this year, which was a travesty, but for I, Tonya. And he's been around forever. Not that he's old, but been around forever. He's done a lot. And he's been very successful. Sorry, Stephen, if you're watching, you're very young and wonderful looking. No, but he's a very sweet guy. And he was saying the tough thing with writing is you get better every time you write. So every time you go in to write something new and think you're better, you are, but then it makes it harder to start again because you're trying to avoid all the mistakes you know you made last time. And so while you do get better, your perspective makes it harder to enjoy being better because you're more critical of yourself as you go.
Right. And like if you go back and read old scripts now, we're probably like, why did we send that to people?
Yeah. I made the mistake of doing that with some old Acme shows where I went back and I watched myself doing some improv and I was like, oh my God, I'm horrible. Like,
but at the time you were brilliant.
Yes.
Right?
At the time I was like, I am nailing this.
In your arc as a performer, you were doing well.
Right.
But I think, it's tough when we were writing the pilot of Life Sentence. We were outlining, actually, in Aaron's dining room, and we were having a really tough time breaking part of the story, and I think I was, like, on the edge of tears, and I turned to Aaron's husband, who was in the other room, and I was like, hey, Joe, if this isn't the last thing we ever do and we don't fail here and never work again, please remind me of how I feel right now and that this is normal and that it's part of the process
yes.
to doubt yourself and think you're not going to figure it out. Mm-hmm. Because usually that feeling tends to come right before you actually do. And I think if you let that fear or that those tears stop you, you never break through to that part.
You got to jump over that hurdle.
Yeah. We've definitely done a lot of crying in my dining room over the years. It's funny that my dining room became our de facto workspace before we had an office. But that we were, you know, in trying to break story, which I think is the hardest part of writing, and mm-hmm. especially writing TV, because you're trying to break a story that's self-contained but also can go on and on and on indefinitely,
yeah.
which is much different than a feature where you're like, we have, you know, beginning,
middle
and end.
Yeah, yeah.
And a very, I mean, you can mess with it, and certain writers do very well by having non-traditionally structured screenplays, but generally speaking, features are like a poem. There's sort of a rhyme scheme or a this needs to happen and then this. Mm-hmm. And in TV, it's really subjective. Other than the act breaks being where they are on the network you're on, you can kind of do whatever you want. And you don't necessarily, it's not a here's a character in their normal world. Something happens and changes their worldview and they go on a quest. There are some shows that are like that. But for us, our shows are more character based and ensemble. So it does get really tough when you're in act three and act four and it's the middle of the story and you can't just lean on that. Oh, this is the part where the love story escalates or the premise gets turned on its head, because that's not how it works. I mean, it's so subjective that it can be really difficult sometimes.
Yeah.
To
we often have a really good beginning and an end. And then we're like, ugh, now we have like four acts that we have to like think of stuff that can
to
happen
like fill
in
it
between.
In, yeah.
And I was just reading, is it Brian Koppelman who does Billions?
Yeah.
So he was answering a bunch
of
questions.
He does the Moment podcast,
yeah.
too.
So, and he was answering a lot of questions on Twitter. He did like, for an hour, ask me anything and I'll answer it if I want to. And he was saying his least favorite part of writing was breaking acts 2 through 4.
Yeah.
He loves figuring out the beginning. He loves figuring out the ending. He loves writing the script, shooting it, editing it. It's filling in the middle part where anything can happen that
all
makes
the
your
details.
Stomach hurt.
I so agree with him.
Yeah.
That's really
I think about
true.
That, too, because I think this would be a really funny opening to a show, or this would be a great ending to a show. I feel like that way, too. And then I'm like, if I sit down to try to fill in anything in the middle, I'm like, ooh.
Yeah.
But I mean,
this is boring.
The
what do I
is,
do?
You know, Bill Lawrence, our fellow executive producer, you know, his way of breaking story is very much he wants to know where it ends. You have to know where it starts, because that's otherwise, how do you start the story?
Right.
And then he figures out moments in the middle that are good act breaks or character turns, or, you know, he'll say, okay, if this is the emotional moment that's going to happen in act 4 or 5, we have to find a moment to tee it up. And so instead of breaking it in a linear fashion, which we try to do and sometimes works, sometimes doesn't, he'll go beginning, end, and then fill in those middle pieces as tent poles or signposts and then get from one to the next,
which
and
is really smart. I mean, he said there was one day where he was like, I know that if we're starting here and ending up here, and we set this up so that it pays off, I know we have a show. So now there's 100 different ways that we can get from A to B, and mm-hmm. that's what your room's for, and that's what just like days of brainstorming and knocking your head against a wall are for. But you can get there if you have those tentpole moments.
And I think it's both a blessing and a curse. When you look at an empty whiteboard, you feel like you need to fill it with 20 beats of a story, an A story for a TV show. And you really don't. It needs to be about 12, maybe 14. Any more than that, you're going to end up cutting a bunch of them later. But then you're like, oh, that's so much easier to do 12. And then you realize, no, it's even harder because you have to get through 20 thoughts and ideas, compress them into 12, yeah. and not make it feel like it's a bunch of scenes sort of hodgepodge together. So it's an interesting dilemma where you're like, oh, I don't need as many ideas as I thought I did, but then I need these 12 to encompass the 20 that I would have had if I had more time to tell the story.
We're basically still figuring it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
been one of the interesting things, though, is the more we've worked, everyone still is. Because every new story is different. There, you know.
Right. There's no one way to break a story or tell a story. There's no one way to write a room
run a room.
Run a room or be in a room. You know, it's all really subjective.
And every room is different, too. And just because you're the showrunner or you're running the room, the people you have in the room, if you're a decent human being, also dictate the way the room needs to be run and the way it will be most productive. So every show is its own animal. And I think, you know, that was a large part of the hurdle of the first season of Life Sentence and every first season is figuring out what not only what the show is, but how it runs most effectively, how people are most productive, how you get the best ideas, what are the best ideas,
right.
And which ideas fit this show and help tell the story in a way that not only you want to write, but that hopefully your audience will want to watch.
I want to back up just a little bit and talk about Significant Mother. Mm-hmm. Because that was really, would you guys say that that was like the breakthrough for you? Or was it getting, because it started with the CW Seed, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I'd say that our kind of moment or our breakthrough moment was winning the New York Television Festival.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what kind of opened the door. We were already pitching Significant Mother before we won that festival, but nobody wanted to buy it. And then we won the festival and CW Seed participated in the festival and we hadn't met them there because we won the comedy pilot competition and CW Seed was doing web content and so it was a different category.
So web wasn't even on your radar at all.
Well, no, we were pitching.
We were pitching it as a web web show.
But the thing that got us into the festival was a half hour original pilot. So we were in a different part of the festival.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, and then because we knew that CW Seed had participated in the festival, we asked our producer that we had been going out with Significant Mother with if he thought that. That would be, you know, the fact that we had won would matter to CW Seed and should we go pitch them? And we had a meeting the next week and we sold the show
like 24 hours later. Yeah.
Yeah. The day after the meeting.
So amazing.
In the room. Yeah.
And what's interesting, too, because you're talking about starting out as an actor, that the relationship with our producer on that show was a guy named Trip Reed, who directed 8 out of the 9 episodes. And I met Trip because I was auditioning for and then testing for a web series he did called Dating Rules for My Future Self. Which has Sherry Appleby in it, who's now on Unreal.
I love. She's so good.
Yeah, great. I went into test, and it was me and 2 other guys, and they were both way more handsome. And I was like, the only way I have a shot at this is if I'm the funniest of the three. So I improvised a lot. And Tripp thought I was very funny. The other executive producer did not, to the level of saying, hey, do you realize that this is her show? It's not yours. And I was like, yeah, but she already has this job. So if you hire me, I'll show up and say the words as written. But I thought maybe I should come in here and get hired before we go down that path.
Yes.
Needless to say, I did not get that job. But Tripp actually reached out to my manager, and this was right when we were starting to write together, and was like, Rich is funny. Is he a writer? Is he an improviser? And so I went and met with Tripp one-on-one, and I was like, I'm starting to write with a fellow actor of mine. Would you want to read our script when we finish? And so we sent that to Tripp when we finished. And he was like, hey, do you guys want to come in for a meeting to talk about some ideas? So we went in thinking it was going to be informal. And Les Morgenstein, who's the head of Alloy Entertainment, was on the phone from New York with like another producer there. And they pitched us 2 ideas. And we were like, oh, this is really formal.
Wow.
Yeah. And Significant Mother was one of the 2 that they pitched us that they just basically had a log line for.
Yeah, they were like a guy marries his best friend's mom was like their...
That was
The
original title was So I Married Your MILF. That was basically, they were like, right. That's the title, and you get the gist of it.
That's a horrible title.
Right. So we were like, the first thing we're going to do is change the title.
Yes.
Which wasn't Significant Mother, because when we were doing it for the web, we were doing a much edgier version of the show. So it was actually called, If I Can Swear on Your Podcast.
You can.
Motherfucker.
Beep! Oh, sorry. I tried to time it, but I just... It was
you were a little late. Delay. The delay button later.
So
you can do all the swears.
Okay.
Great. So yeah. So it was originally Motherfucker for the web.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
actually for 1 second it was hard to swallow and we were like, it should not be hard to swallow.
No, it was awful. But we, you know, it was funny because we left that meeting being like, oh, So I Married Your MILF. Like, that's not what we really want to write about, you know. But then
especially because at the time neither one of you guys were not married yet and no kids.
We definitely had no kids. I was married.
Yeah, I was engaged.
Yeah. But
so
it
probably
was
writing about
our...
like a sexy mom cougar kind of thing was probably not
yeah,
something.
It wasn't really our. It wasn't really what we were.
Well,
you know,
they
definitely wasn't
do...
what we were coming up with on our own.
Right.
They wanted to do like a raunchy American Pie sex comedy, and that wasn't necessarily where our heads were at. But then we were like, "Hey, Tripp seems really cool."
And no one else has asked us to develop a show for them before, so we should probably come up with something. But it was cool. It was a great challenge for us because we actually came up with a way to explore that topic and that show that we ended up really liking, which was really just to make it a show about a dysfunctional family who was all sort of coming of age together anew after the parents' divorce. And that
you may notice a similar
thematic
theme in-
definitely also shows up in Life Sentence. It's a much different, you know, way in. And
but you know, in
but that's more our wheelhouse, like dysfunctional family stuff, you know, parents and kids, adult children becoming friends with their parents, and how it's just such an interesting kind of tricky time of life, you know.
But I think to what Aaron was saying earlier, what we were talking about, you know, in terms of having vision, we both weren't necessarily immediately drawn to that idea, but it was a simple idea that we knew we could understand and bring back a pitch on. And so we
and
just
since it was only one line, it was only like a log line, we were like, we really can come up with whatever characters and whatever world we want to and set this wherever we want to, which was us really exciting because I think the other thing they pitched us was based on a book. So it would have been a more... more of an adaptation, and we would have inherited a lot more material. And for us, the log line was like, well, we could do whatever we wanted with it. So that
more freedom.
So we really took a lot of time to think about what, if the log line didn't exist, what sort of show would we want to do right now?
Yeah.
And then we found a way to sort of take that and
put the premise,
put the premise on a thematic area that we thought would be fun to explore.
Which I think is really good for us actually, because we're more character driven people, and the high concept part of it was always harder for us to come up with, like, you know, sometimes we would come up with like a high concept in a void and be like, that would be cool, someone else should write that.
Yeah, that's the problem, we come up with high concept stuff sometimes, we're like, that's probably too cool of an idea for us.
Yeah, we're probably not the people to write that, but we love doing character comedy and dramedy, romantic comedy, that kind of thing. And so if we can find a high concept premise to put that kind of writing into, that's where we have found ourselves some success.
Yes.
Is Life Sentence a dramedy?
It is a dramedy.
If we're doing it well, it is. If it's only one or the other, that's a bad week. So.
If more people are like sobbing and like, oh my God, this is so sad.
Actually, I prefer to err on the side. If there was a week where you mostly sob and only chuckle a little, I think it's more successful than if you chuckle a lot and are like, yeah, I don't really care about any of that stuff happened.
It should be both. We're hoping that this show makes people laugh and cry.
So I would love to hear more about the origins of Life Sentence. Because the last time I saw you, we were at a coffee shop in Eagle Rock, which had that cute little kids area, which they took out, by the way.
They left it. So they left the table and the chairs, but they left the walls that keep the kids in.
No, those are gone now.
Those are gone now, too?
All gone now. And it's all like fancy couches and very quiet people on their laptops.
They also got rid of their really good breakfast foods.
Oh.
They've like winnowed it down to three things.
What is the name of this place?
Swork. Swork. And I just was watching an episode of Modern Family, and they shot in there.
That was with?
I've been there. I've seen that big orange question mark.
And the last time I talked with you, you were just in the beginning stages of, I think you had your treatment for a Life Sentence. You had just connected with Bill Lawrence and things.
This was pre the tears I was talking about.
It had, yes, it had been just, I think, been picked up or something great had just happened.
I think we just sold the pitch and we were working on the script or getting to work on the script.
So a lot has happened since then.
Yes.
Yes.
You guys
not just on Swork's remodel, but also
not just on that coffee shop, but also in your personal lives, in your careers. And I would love to, first of all, let's talk about the show. How do you get connected with Bill Lawrence, number one? Because that's amazing.
Yeah.
And then
outside his driveway.
Also, you just
he comes and
him.
Goes at least twice a day.
Please don't do that.
Yeah,
don't,
just don't a giant sign that says, producers. I've always loved Scrubs. And Cougar Town was fun, too.
And Cougar Town was fun, too. I was on Cougar Town.
Were you?
Oh, nice.
Woohoo.
Nice.
Yes. It was an episode directed by Courtney Cox, which was kind of a thrill for me.
Yeah, that's really
like,
cool.
Only had Monica.
Yeah.
I didn't say that, though. I kept it.
Yeah.
I kept it cool, guys.
You kept it cool.
I was profesh. But I would love to know, then, did things just sort of happen at, like, lightning speed from then on, or did it feel like this process was very like tedious and slow to get to this point where you're at now a week before the premiere?
You know, it. This is year has definitely not felt tedious and slow. It's been jam packed and really a roller coaster would be more how I would describe it. But yeah, I mean, from that moment, from so I was pregnant at the same time Rich's wife was pregnant,
and I found out they were pregnant on the same day.
Yes,
that is so
big
true.
Day, big day.
And we sold the pilot. When we were in our, I guess we were entering our third trimester, and
we sold it on the Friday before Labor Day because I remember it was the last day of taping on our old show, and then we, Sarah and I were leaving the next day to go on a baby moon to Greece, and this is so when we won the New York Television Festival, we were leaving the next day to go to Italy for our delayed honeymoon. So it seems planning a trip we that try, we can't afford is a good way to get hired
to get
for
jobs.
A job to pay for the trip.
Yeah, so we. We, in the third trimester of pregnancy, wrote this pilot, and about a week after our kids were born, maybe two, was when we found out that the show was getting picked up to pilot.
Wow.
And then, you know, we were three, I guess the kids were like 3 months when we, or 2 months when we shot the pilot.
Yeah.
And now they're both 15 months. Yep. They're both 15 months old now.
Because they're a few weeks apart?
1 week.
1 week apart.
So the day we turned in our studio draft of the pilot, Sarah went into labor that morning at like 5 in the morning, 6
in the
morning.
So I had to do the notes call by myself.
Yeah. Oh my God. And so, and then the next week, the day we turned in the network draft, she was in labor. So I had to do all that phase.
Wow.
By myself.
Yeah. I cannot.
And that's
even
when we
imagine.
Were like, it's so good that we have a partner, especially when you're both having babies at the exact same time.
I know. And that's why I'm like, I have heard so many stories about the overwhelming amount of pressure. Like when you're talking about network notes, you're talking about deadlines, an entire crew that's depending on you, other producers and that sort of thing. I can't imagine also having a baby at the same time.
It wasn't light.
It was not an easy process.
It was not an easy process, but I do have to say that there's something about not being able to fixate too much on anything this year because, you know, sometimes we had to, you know, make parenting decisions that were like, I guess that's good enough for now because we got to do this other thing. And then with the scripts, I mean, with the show, you know, you're on all these deadlines and at some point you just have to be like, okay, we're going to figure that out later. We have to, we're going to turn this in. We're going to rewrite it all through the shooting. We're going to like get to rewrite it again in editing at the end of it. Like we can't be too precious about anything or we just have to like get through this time period. And there's something about that, that I think is helpful on some level.
We were also very lucky that we had incredibly supportive partners during this.
Yeah. Because, oh my God. Yeah.
I mean, especially, you know, Aaron definitely pulled a much heavier double duty than I did. Sarah was very much a full-time mom. And, you know, Joe was obviously a very full-time dad as well, but it's just slightly different pressure on the mom. Like when we went to Atlanta to film the pilot, we shot 14-hour days and then would go home and I got to just pass out face first into my mattress, whereas Aaron had to go home and wake up three times in the night during the 6 hours of sleep we got
and pump feed her baby. Like all day while we were shooting. Every like 3 hours I was like, okay, I'm going to miss the coverage of this scene because I have to go
we
home.
Have, yeah. We had it. We even had our own special code for it. So on the set, going 10-1 is going pee, going 10-2 is going poo, and going 10-2% is going to make milk for your baby.
I love it.
Yes. I got my own. What's it called?
And what is it? I don't know.
Code word.
Your own code.
Code name pumping. Oh, and just to circle back because you asked it and I wrote it down on a little sticky pad. We met Bill. We basically had done a pilot at CW the year before that didn't go, that was an hour long. And coming out of that when it didn't go and Significant Mother went away, Warner Brothers reached out to us and offered us a blind script deal. And this idea for Life Sentence
basically means, you know, for the people listening who don't know what that means, it basically means they are making a commitment to buy something from you that year, provided they can sell it, but that they're going to find something. And then you have to go and pitch them a whole bunch of ideas and see which one they want to do. Yeah.
And so Life Sentence ended up being that idea. We'd originally thought of it as a darker than it ended up cable dramedy.
Half hour.
Half hour. And they set us up. They really liked it and set us up with some pods, which are like production companies, one of which is Bill's Doozer. And Bill liked the premise, but felt that it was like a little heavier. And at that time, it was actually more focused on just the love story falling apart. And what happened is we started talking about doing it as a half hour for network. Mm-hmm. Warner Brothers thought there might be more of a life to it if we took a lighter hearted approach.
And kind of focused it on being a dysfunctional family comedy. So that's originally how we were pitching it.
And we took it to Bill with that, and he came on. He was like, oh, yeah. No, dysfunctional family comedy. That's my jam. I want to do that.
Yeah. And then the week that we were pitching, we were also trying to develop something with the drama side at Warner Brothers at the same time. Because even though we had a blind script deal, Rich and I had vision, and we were like, let's do two while having babies.
I'm glad we didn't.
Wow. I'm so glad we didn't. But the drama side was like, we really want you to do a dysfunctional family drama for CW, because CW had, we had a relationship with them. They'd worked with us before. So we were trying to come up with a separate idea than this for CW. And then one day we were kind of like, you know what? This is really actually, if you tweak it just that much, just a tiny bit, it's a perfect show for CW because it has a young female lead. It has romantic storylines. It has family stories.
No superheroes in this one. Oh.
No.
So we started thinking of it as a good show for CW. And the same week we were going to pitch it as a half hour comedy everywhere else, we pitched it as an hour dramedy to CW, and they ended up
buying it in the room. Yes,
which was so wonderful.
Like, what did you do in that moment? Like, I don't even know what that would be like for me, like walking in and getting cast in the lead in the moment.
Oh my God. I think we kind of looked at each other and we're like, wait, did that just happen? Like we've heard stories of this elusive buying it in the room, but like we'd never experienced that before. So it was
amazing.
It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And it seemed very easy for them to make the decision. They were kind of like, cool, we want to do it. And we were like, What?
Yeah. Really?
Okay.
Then they handed us
a giant check, like in Happy Gilmore.
I think it happens to Bill all the time, though. He wasn't surprised. I think that's why it happened also, because we're sitting there with Bill Lawrence, who's like, I like this. And Bill
Bill ticked it off his I'm continually living my dreams punch card. He was like, nope, that's the third one this year. So cool. I get it.
But it was new for us.
Well, we're so ingrained to expect rejection in this business, whether you're an actor, producer, writer, you know, whatever. We're so ingrained for someone to say, no, try again, no, whatever.
Yeah.
That I can totally
try again seems generous.
It does seem generous. No, try again. You're doing great. So I could totally see how you would feel that. But what an amazing moment and feeling that must have been. Now, you guys were, if I remember right, you said you were executive producers on Significant Mother, but you were not the showrunners on that show, right?
Right. I mean, we had a partner who was technically the showrunner. I mean, he did all of our production stuff. Rich and I were the writers.
According to the Writers Guild, we were the showrunners.
Yeah, he was non-writing showrunner. So,
which, by the way, the Writers Guild does not accept that term. There is no such thing.
He was our partner.
Yeah.
We were a three-headed monster because he did a lot of the heavy lifting.
He made the show happen. He brought it in on time
and on budget, which is a lot of what a showrunner is supposed to do.
Yes. Yeah.
So he definitely did that. And we wrote, I mean, that show was so strange because we didn't have a staff. We had two freelance writers, and then we wrote seven of the nine episodes and, you know, rewrote their episodes with that. I mean, they did a great job, but you know, as a showrunner, you tend to kind of put it all in your voice, especially if you're writing the other seven. So
is that something that's happening now on Life Sentence? You guys are more of a showrunner type role where you're doing all of that same thing. And are you also overseeing on time and budget and all of that?
You know, Bill is doing a lot of budget stuff. But yes, in terms of on time and in terms of
we're the co-showrunners.
Production.
We're doing a lot more production on this show.
Yes.
Do you feel like this has been also like a learning as you go experience? Like,
completely.
Because I don't know that there's a class for show running. I mean, maybe there is.
There is, and we've taken it.
Oh, yes,
we took it last year.
There's a showrunner training program at the WGA that is fantastic. And we just went back to speak a couple weeks ago, but they have an incredible program for people who are on the verge of becoming showrunners to sort of talk them through the process and talk them through ways of, you know,
making that transition
and jumping into a job that is always a challenge for however much experience you've had, but as somebody who's new to it. Yeah. Bill actually spoke at the program the year we were there, and the guy who's now our producing director on Life Sentence spoke and told, you know, did a whole lecture on how to be a producing director.
What is
and
that?
So then we hired him because we're like, he seems to know what he's talking about.
This guy's got it together.
And ironically, he directed me on an episode of Veronica Mars like 10 years ago.
Oh my gosh.
And was just one of the nicest, most kind human beings I'd ever met. He called
John Kretschmer.
I love to hear that.
John T. Kretschmer.
John T.
Because there's a John D. Kretschmer who's a costume designer on Homeland.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Or production designer.
I feel like kindness goes very far in this business. It does. Like, even just as far as being like bitchy, because word of mouth, you know, spreads and people will know. Like,
we've heard about you, Heather.
I know. Everyone has.
Yeah.
Google me. but I would love to talk to you guys about the show itself. Let's talk about the characters. Let's talk about the actors. What can we expect to see and what is going to keep people coming back week after week?
Yeah. Well, do you want to give the like log line of the show? Because that's your jam.
Yes.
And then I'll talk about what's going to keep coming.
Just in case you want to edit this, if I mess it up, I'll take a breath and then you can.
Okay.
And if not, we'll go straight through.
Okay.
okay. So Life Sentence is the story of Stella Abbott, who spent the last 8 years living like she was dying because she was. She had terminal cancer. And so her entire family spent those 8 years doing whatever it took to make her life seem perfect, including sending her on a whirlwind bucket list trip to Europe, where she meets Wes, who is basically the man of her dreams, and they agree to spend the rest of her life together, thinking it'll be 6 to 8 months tops. Unfortunately, and also fortunately in the pilot, she finds out that her terminal cancer is cured, and their forever just got a whole lot longer than the two of them were expecting. And what's more, her perfect family, it turns out, was just pretending to be perfect and has a whole host of problems of their own.
It's brilliant. I love it. I'm in.
Yay.
So who's cast in this?
Lucy Hale plays Stella Abbott, and she is awesome. Fantastic. I really don't think we could have gotten any luckier with this casting. Lucy is just a gem and is bringing so much to this character.
And was kind enough to meet with us before we'd even sold the show. She and Bill are at the same agency, and she was interested in working with Bill, and Bill in his infinite wisdom was like, you know what makes a good dramedy great is an awesome star packaged with it. So we met with her at a coffee shop on the Warner Brothers lot when we were just talking about the idea, and got to spend like an hour and a half with her and sort of get to know her a little bit, and then went off and sold the show to CW. And
with her attached?
Not yet.
Oh.
So we sold the show to CW with her attached.
She wanted to read it first, understandably.
Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, yes. After the overwhelming success of Significant Mother, she wasn't going to put all her blind faith in us. But after we'd finished writing the script, and before the script went to the network to be considered to be shot as a pilot, she read it and signed on.
And so that's when she attached.
So I have a really awkward story to tell you guys about Lucy Hale and something embarrassing I did. So I got invited to a Wonder Woman event at Warner Brothers last year, and I was doing a Facebook Live covering their new Wonder Woman exhibit. Mm-hmm. And in the middle of my Facebook Live, one of the stars came up from Wonder Woman, and I was like, oh my God, it's Lucy Hale, you guys. What a great pleasure. You know, it's such a great, I don't know, thrill to talk to you. Oh my God. And I'm interviewing her, and she was so lovely and so wonderful. And I'm just like, wow, what a thrill. La, 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 la. And I, you know, in the Facebook Live, and I go back and I'm like tagging her and all this stuff. And I'm like, I get a message from people going, that's not Lucy Hale, that's Lucy Davis. British lady, totally different person. And I was like, oh my God, I'm mortified because like all these people watched it. But anyway. And the reason Lucy Hale was in my mind is because you guys had just announced that you were casting her, or she was casting the show, and I had been seeing your post. Oh, so her name was in my mind.
I'm glad to know that my Instagram and Twitter feed haunt your dreams.
They do. They do. Good. They really do. So yeah, I've been excited for that, and she's her name is locked up here.
Yeah.
No, I think, I mean, she's been awesome and such a great collaborator, and I think people are going to be surprised to find out just how funny she is.
She's so really funny. She's cute.
But without trying, which works great in a dramedy. You don't ever feel like she's
trying. She's never trying to like land a joke.
No,
she's just
but she does.
Really, cute.
So tell me then, what about this story? Besides, I mean, it's just, it is a beautiful premise and it's an interesting premise, and idea. What's going to like draw people in? Do you think it is the characters that you talked about? Because, you know, you guys love to write about characters.
Yeah, I think it is the characters. I think it's Stella's journey trying to figure out who she is now. I think the show really speaks to anybody who's kind of defined their life in any way or has an idea for what their life is going to be or what the purpose of their life is, and then they get thrown a curveball. So it's not just, you know, cancer is a very small part of the show, and it's really just the premise and the setup. It's really about life and living after maybe a tragedy or after a life shift or something like that.
I mean,
like
the show begins where cancer ends.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. I like the idea that the curveball that's thrown is not that she gets cancer.
Right.
It's that she doesn't have it anymore.
Right. I think to Aaron's point, you know, twist. I mean, when we were talking about with Significant Mother, trying to find themes that we like, I mean, I think one that came up in that and in this is not only starting your life late, but like Aaron was saying, you know, most of us have this thing or a couple small things that we think are our identity and who we are. And when we came up with this idea, we both really liked the notion of A, someone getting to start out way too late in life, but having a really good excuse and then realizing that that excuse only goes so far. And also B, who are you when the thing that defines you is stripped away from you? And whether that thing is death, a career, a relationship, being good at something silly. I mean, we all have these little things that we think make us who we are. And if those go away, can we survive that? And can we reinvent ourselves? And I think that hopefully transcends the premise and cancer and is something that we all are faced with at some point in our lives.
I would love to know how your writing has changed, if at all, since becoming parents. Is there anything that maybe you...
I'm more tired when I do it.
Look at differently?
Yeah. Is there anything... You know, I think one of the things that is different for us is it's become increasingly important to us what the messages are that we're putting out into the world. I think, you know, we start to think about other show ideas or working on certain things and then just say, is that something that we really want to be contributing to society? You know, we're not politicians. We're not...
changing. I did run for the board of the Writers Guild, yeah, but I came in last place.
It's true. So we're not really changing the world.
I came in next to last place. There was one person who didn't even campaign or show up, and I beat them.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Here's the deal. I feel like, though, television does change the world.
Well, I think
I feel like film and television do in such a, maybe a more subtle way. It's not necessarily like hit you over the head, yeah, but we're affected by good television and great movies.
Yeah. Well,
hopefully you're showing the world what's possible instead of what's... not just what's wrong with the world, but what could be right with it, mm-hmm, in a way that inspires people rather than, I think a lot of the news right now, rightfully so, is based in fear and anger.
Yeah.
And that, if anything, I think leads to people being disillusioned and feeling like there's nothing they can do. Whereas when TV and art is good, it should inspire you and feel like there's a million things you can do,
right,
even if they're small.
Yeah. And I think in our way, you know, of contributing to the world in some, you know, this is our way. This is what we do. We're writers. And so the stories that we put out there, I think, are maybe more important to us now. And this show just has a lot of hope, you know, and I think that's something that
we need
and, you know, personally we need and we want to put out there.
Yeah, run your set differently, run your show differently? Do you, now that you're parents, are you kind of like, hey guys, do we really need this last take? Like, let's go. We got to get home to our families.
Well, we try to be conscious of people's time for sure. I mean, we've worked on shows in the past where, you know, the showrunner maybe didn't have a family to go home to and didn't really care what time we were done because mm-hmm, the show was the only thing.
Or secretly felt like the show was their family and wouldn't admit that out loud because that might be sad. But they didn't want to go home. They were with their family.
Right. And while we... you know, worked 24/7 on this show, we also had a lot of writers who have kids and families, and it was important to us to get out the day, you know, at a certain time. And if we had to go back and do work, which we always did after the kids were in bed, we mm-hmm. did that. But it made a difference for us to say, like, yeah, we're probably going to be done on time during these days. Yeah. And we're probably going to start on time. You know, we're not going to waste. We didn't want to waste people's time.
Right.
We didn't want to waste our own time. We didn't want to waste other people's time.
Right.
And we felt like, you know, everything would get done. But it was also important to find as much balance as we could, given a schedule that is completely impossible to balance. But we definitely tried.
I mean, that was one of the things they talked about at the showrunner training program at the Writers Guild was, this is an impossible job and you can never do it perfectly. Mm-hmm.
And you can do it 24 hours a day if you
want to
or sure. let yourself. But doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be better.
Nope.
You know, it doesn't. You need breaks. You need to live life in order to reflect life in your writing.
What is your dream scenario for this show? Like, where do you see it going? What's like the best case scenario moving forward?
100 episodes, international syndication. Oh, you mean creatively? Sorry, I was just dreaming of owning a home someday.
Don't you own like two? Well, you go to Greece like every 5 seconds. What are you
talking
about?
I went to Greece one time.
You go to Italy.
Get
all the
current
time?
On my Instagram. That's why I don't own a house.
Didn't you just get back from like Europe or New York?
Rich and I
no,
traveled.
I was in New York, but Sarah was working, so I was being.
I'm like, you're like a globetrotter. Yeah, what are you talking about?
Basically, my baby won't nap for me during the day unless it's in a stroller. So while Sarah was shooting a commercial, I was walking around with Ophelia in a stroller in 25-degree weather for an hour and a half twice a day while she took naps. It was very cold.
Take one for the team, buddy.
Yeah.
Step up.
Yeah. Dad goals.
Yeah, dad goals.
I wish we had a lot more time because I would love to delve more into like the parenting side of what you guys have experienced. And I know you also will have like a wealth of more ideas for your show and like lots of more stories and stuff coming up that I would imagine will come from your parenting world and, mm-hmm. you know, all of that good stuff.
And hopefully from getting, you know, we're sort of winding down post-production now. If we're lucky enough to get a second season, we wouldn't come back till the end of May. So our hope is to spend some time being parents and living life, because our show is a family show. I mean, the center of it is this relationship. It's a will they or won't they for a couple that already did, and figuring out whether or not the fact that they got married for the right reasons at the time, is that enough to keep them together? But more than that, you know, her parents, played by Gillian Vigman and Dylan Walsh, have a really interesting, dysfunctional relationship, but there's a lot of love there. And her brother, played by Jason Blair, is sort of a mess, but again, for understandable reasons. And so I think the more we can live life and be a mess and make those mistakes, the more we'll have to share with the show if we get to come back.
Pulling stories from your own life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I am so proud of you both. I know I've known Rich a long time, and I'm like, I feel like this weird big sister, like, no, good for you. I'm so proud of you. But I think it's wonderful what you guys have done. I said that in the beginning, how you've taken your career and took it in a different direction and have found success. I think that's fantastic and it's very inspiring. So thank you guys so much for talking with me and sharing your story.
It was our pleasure.
You.
Life Sentence premieres on March 7th, you guys, on the CW. Make sure you check that out. I'm going to put up information about the show and about Rich and Aaron on motherhoodinhollywood.com, as well as where you guys can find them and follow them on social media. And that's going to do it for me. You guys have a wonderful week. And remember, I'm not a perfect mom, but I can play one on TV. Bye.
Mama funny.
Balls.